It's time to play like a Jet with your host, Scott Mason.
Play like a Jet. What does that mean?
Smith rifles that one to Mims. And that's a foot race. He's going to win. Touchdown, Baylor. Denzel Mims with another monster score of 70 yards. Five straight games, Anthony, where he's got a touchdown catch of over 20.
That's deflected and picked off Mosley. He'll take it in. It's a pick six and a touchdown.
Fell into the middle of that line, and it's a touchdown.
Big return for Crowder. 85 yards.
Darnold escapes, trying to buy himself some time. Fires end zone. It's caught. Incredible play by Darnold.
Hill hit immediately when he got the handoff.
You know who that's?
The Q-inator.
Oh my gosh.
Listen, thank you.
From the TOJ Digital Studio, this is Play Like a Jet. My name is Scott Mason. You can follow me on Twitter at PlayLikeAJet1. And it's time to talk about the Jets and the Arizona Cardinals. Post-game report, final score 30-10. The Arizona Cardinals get the victory. I wasn't that far off. I thought it was going to be 24-7. Today, a little bit different. Instead of Andy Vasquez from NorthJersey.com, who's here most weeks, today, Joe Blewett, who's on the show normally to do X and O quick hits, is doing a little double duty this week. I'm really glad that he was able to join me because all kinds of scheduling conflicts. So this will be a little bit different because normally when you hear from Joe on the show, he sat down and watched you all 22s. But today we're going to talk about everything after the fact, directly after. So, Joe, what a game that was, huh? Something else.
Yeah, it's funny, like, because you say double duty, and maybe I would enjoy doing double duty if the Jets were actually good, but double duty on a week like this, like, rough, man. You gotta start throwing me some cash or something. But it sucks. It's honestly, like, I still see people getting mad on Twitter and all this stuff. I don't know how you get mad at this point. Like, it's expected every single week. You know, we're all kind of rooting for the same thing at this point, and wins don't do anything. So today was a positive outcome.
So let's talk about what happened in this game. And before the game, I had said that the Cardinals really only have two weapons on offense because Kenyon Drake hasn't delivered much in the running game this year. It's been all Kyler Murray and DeAndre Hopkins. And I said if the Jets could come close to stopping those guys, they might be competitive. I didn't expect it to happen, and I was right. DeAndre Hopkins actually wasn't that awesome in the first half. They reasonably kept him in check, but in the second half, he really went off. He had that big touchdown grab to seal the deal, and he ended up with well over 100 yards receiving. And Kyler Murray, I thought he was going to do a lot of damage with his legs. He didn't, and mostly it's because he didn't need to. He was so efficient passing the ball, and it was DeAndre Hopkins doing some damage. It was Christian Kirk doing some damage as well, but he more or less had his way with the defense. Now, Avery Williamson was able to get in there for an interception, so it wasn't all bad. John Franklin Myers had another really good game, actually got a sack. But beyond that, the defense was absolutely horrible again. No pressure whatsoever. Kyler Murray was only touched once, and it was that John Franklin Myers sack that I talked about before. A constant theme here with Greg Williams' defense this year, zero pressure, terrible coverage. Although I will say one of the bright spots was I thought Lamar Jackson did pretty well. I know he got beat on those two plays by DeAndre Hopkins, but one of them was just an incredible catch by Hopkins, and the other was a perfect throw by Kyler Murray. So I thought even with that, he did a pretty good job in this game, especially for an undrafted rookie. But for the most part, this defense was bad all the way around. Coverage, they didn't have to stop the run because Arizona didn't really run the ball much, but they didn't get any pressure. The coverage was poor. Anytime that happens, you're going to allow a ton of points, and that's what happened. Arizona getting 30 points today.
Yeah, and I think I don't know if this counts as technically a hit because of the penalty, but I know that he was hit in the end zone and he threw the ball up. That's when Ashton Davis picked it, but it came back for some type of penalty because that's what the Jets do. They get penalties, so that was not a positive part of the defense either. The linebackers are slow. Jordan Jenkins makes no impact. The pass rush wasn't there, you know, at all today. Quinton Williams was pretty quiet. He had an impact player too that I remember seeing. And again, with defensive linemen, you definitely want to go back and watch the tape because they do make some impact that people don't necessarily see. So he might have been okay, but other than that, from the defense, you know, I saw Huff near Murray sometimes. I saw obviously John Franklin Myers, who's been one of the biggest positives of this year. You know, a guy who made an impact his rookie year. The Rams defensive line is so good, they didn't have enough room for him. You know, last year he gets hurt for the entire year, so nobody's really expecting anything from him, but he's been one of the if not the most productive pass rusher on the team. So he had a sack, which is a positive, like you said, with Lamar Jackson. It's all about relative tech. It's all about expectations. And for him to just be in the vicinity of Hopkins on both throws and make Hopkins make difficult catches. They weren't necessarily easy catches. Obviously, yeah, perfect world. He deflects the ball, picks it off, you know, shuts him down, whatever. But again, relative to expectations for a guy in Lamar Jackson being undrafted to just be in the vicinity and making Hopkins have to adjust the catches and make difficult catches, you have to give him, you know, a slight positive. It can't be too big of a positive because obviously he got beat multiple times and they kept targeting him because, you know, Pierre-Desir only lines up on the defense's left, the offense is right. So they kept putting Hopkins on the left side and targeting Lamar Jackson, which is a smart thing to do, even though he could have burned Pierre-Desir, you know, just as easily because he's terrible. McDougal's terrible. Marcus May has been making no impact. Avery Williamson had a nice pick. You know, good job by Hewitt, who rushed and then saw that he couldn't get to the quarterback, adjusted his body into the quarterback's throwing lane. I don't know if he did it based on hallway, eyes, whatever it was, but he got into the throwing lane, tipped it up. Avery Williamson picks it. And, of course, in the Jets' fashion ever, delay of game, and now it's not, you know, first and 10 or first and goal from the 10 or whatever it was. Now it's first and 15. So that's just how they do it, because obviously Adam Gase was just, it was so much pressure to get a play out in a minute. You know, coaches can't do that. You should have seen how he did it in practice. It must have been much better. So, yeah, the defense was overall bad. The defense is the worst in the league. I really don't know if there's a worse defense in the league than this, because, like I said, problem with Greg Williams is he spot drops his linebackers. People shred the defense over the middle. So all you have to do is send a couple of routes out that you know are going to spread out cover two and just hit guys over the middle. And there's a couple of plays where they actually play cover two relatively well. I believe I forget exactly what series it was. Again, you know, I didn't go back and watch it, but I remember two plays in a row they shut down the Cardinals with cover two. They come out on third down in cover one man coverage, obviously, and they get shredded in cover one. So you had two plays that worked in cover two, and then you go to cover one on third down, they get beat. So he's not a great coach. A lot of people overrated him last year. Again, we've talked about it. You know, bad teams, bad quarterbacks. And some of the stats, I'm sure, were the Jets getting blown out. So teams didn't really need to try to throw them in the fourth quarter and things like that. So it might have aided them in terms of their overall DVO ranking and things like that. Because obviously, yeah, you have a good game versus, you know, the Bengals, Dolphins, et cetera, whoever it may be. That aids to your DVO ranking. But then when you're getting blown out by whoever the Jets got blown out by last year, plenty of teams, those teams don't have to try in the second half. So that helps their ranking. So he was largely overrated. There's a reason he fizzles out after, you know, 2-3 years everywhere he's gone, mostly 2 years, because his shtick, you know, wears off. The rah-rah stuff wears off. Nobody's really playing hard for him. So, yeah, the defense is terrible. They have a piece or two going forward, probably with, you know, guys like Fado Kosti, Q, Chauncey Lankemeyers, and probably Huff. Maybe Marcus May, if you re-sign him, he takes a cheap contract and he plays more deep than he has been in the box, because the box is not a great player there, or probably below average, to be completely honest. But other than that, Les Austin, maybe. You know, Bryce Hall, Zuniga, but where was he today? I saw that he was not hurt, but I don't know if he even played a rep. I didn't see him. So, yeah, it's bad. That's pretty much it. It's just bad.
The offense wasn't any better, and I would say that if the defense is the worst in the league, the offense also has to be the worst in the league. But I will say Joe Flacco today, people were getting on me when I said this on Twitter. I said I thought he played fairly well for a guy who gets the AARP newsletter and spent the entire offseason recovering from neck surgery, and people thought that that meant that I was saying that Joe Flacco was good. I'm not saying Joe Flacco was good, although he wasn't helped out by all the drop passes, and we're going to get to that, Joe. But what I am trying to say is that the reasonable expectations for Joe Flacco is that he just doesn't embarrass himself in the game, because anything beyond that is asking for way too much from Flacco at this point. People will talk about how he won a Super Bowl that was 8 years ago. He hasn't been good in years. I don't know how great he was to begin with, but he has basically been what he is now, which is a guy who you throw in there and hope he doesn't lose you the game. Joe Flacco certainly didn't do anything eye-opening, but I didn't think he was embarrassing. I didn't think he was good, but I also think that anybody that expected anything more than what they got in this game was fooling themselves. And so when people say that this game proved that nobody could succeed in this offense, granted, I am not defending Adam Gase here at all, but what I am saying is I don't think Joe Flacco's performance proved or disproved anything, because what could you possibly have been expecting from him today?
Yeah, he was just Joe Flacco. Like, it's like you said, neck surgery, hasn't played in you know, a long time. Obviously losing the starting job last year to Drew Lock, which I believe it was because of the injury, and then didn't really get a lot of the training camp preseason, you know, a lot of connection with the receivers, things like that. So yeah, he was better than Luke Falk and David Fales. That's a positive. But if you thought he was going to be the Joe Flacco that he was in 2012, then you're sadly mistaken. And like you said, if you actually go back and watch the highlights of that Super Bowl run that they have, and they have the highlights of all of the playoff games, there was like a billion times where he just chucked it up to Anquan Boldin and he caught it. Like, he really wasn't that impressive. He's never a great quarterback. He was obviously carried by that defense. So, yeah, he, you know, came in and he made some throws. The receivers dropped passes that he did hit him on. There were some times, obviously, he missed some throws. He was out of sync with his receivers, which is expected, like I said, with the lack of training camp, preseason, et cetera. And he panicked in the pocket a little bit as soon as there was some pressure. There were some times he clearly could have just stepped up a little bit, slid forward and delivered the ball. There were some receivers he missed open, but overall, like I said, he wasn't terrible. He wasn't great, but this is why I preface a lot of things I say, Scott, with relative to expectations. Because if you say Joe Flacco played okay, then people are like, oh, what the hell are you talking about? But relative to your expectations, him being a backup, like I said, with all the other factors that we've been discussing, yeah, he was all right. Like I said, I'd rather have him come in than Fales or any one of these guys. Maybe, you know, obviously I would like to see Morgan or maybe even like to see Mike White, but the Jets obviously aren't going to do that. So he looked, you know, as we all pretty much expected.
Play like a Jet. Play like a Jet.
As far as the receivers go, Jamison Crowder's awesome. That's just all I have to say about him. And I was pounding the table for him when he was a free agent in Washington, telling people how good he is. I think now we can see it. I'm just hoping that the Jets don't try and release him at the end of the season to save the $10 million and instead will sign him to a contract extension, because I think he's done everything they could ask of him and more. He's been outstanding in the games that he's played. Did it again today against Arizona. But beyond that, there really wasn't much here in terms of the passing game. I'll tell you one thing that I think has been exposed, and that is the fact that Christopher Herndon isn't good. His rookie year, we all got fooled because he had a few nice games and there was some chemistry with Darnold, but I think he's been exposed now. He has been absolutely dreadful. He continued that today. He had one nice catch, but then he ended up almost coughing the ball up. I hate that we have to burst people's bubbles on this one, but I think it's about time that we acknowledge this fact.
Yeah, I'm not going to lie, and this isn't to blow smoke up my own ass, but with the Herndon thing, even in the offseason when I ranked the top 25 players and we talked about like some superlative type shows, I said that I thought Chris Herndon was largely overrated by Jets fans, where Jets fans are automatically assuming him to come back and be a top 10, top 15 guy. And I was asking the question of, what did he really do his rookie year? Like, you watch his routes that he ran. You know, there were some routes that were definitely nice adjustments to Darnold, you know, rolling out and getting in trouble and him, you know, finding a soft spot in the defense, but that you can't really rely on that consistently. So yeah, there's a few nice plays of that. A nice catch or two, you know, deep versus Jacksonville, which I believe got called back. The Packers catch, sure, that's great. But the other, you know, 500, 600 reps he played, he wasn't really that great. So I didn't expect a great season coming back. I also didn't expect this. Like you said, was that a fumble? Was it not? Probably was. I thought it was going to be by the review. Obviously, you know, they called it that it wasn't a fumble on the field, so they didn't feel it had enough. You know, you have to retain the ball or keep the ball. And then, like you said, the drop pass in the red zone. It could have been an easy first down for the Jets, and he does the cardinal sin of not looking the ball in, which is literally learned that in Pee Wee football. And he also has terrible technique with his hands. There's a reason he has a lot of drops. It's because your hands are supposed to be in that diamond formation. Like, if you put your two index fingers or pointers together and your two thumbs together, that's who you want to catch the ball, catch the nose of the ball. And if it squirts through a little bit, that's fine because your hands are there. What does he do? He tries to clap on the ball. Like, he doesn't – his hands are so far apart, he tries to clap the middle of the ball. So the reason a lot of them squirt through, he's a terrible technique with his catching. At times, he just, oh, it's bad luck. Or, oh, he doesn't look the ball. And his technique with his hands is also awful. So – he's been a massive disappointment this year. Ryan Griffin, another tight end, has been a massive disappointment in terms of him getting a contract and making absolutely no impact. And like we said, I don't know if it was on this show or another show, but he said, you know, after he signed a contract, oh, I don't know if I'll ever be like myself again. I never feel like myself, which is, you know, a great thing to hear after you sign a guy to a contract. And then the wide receivers, if we're talking about the tight ends and the wide receivers, they were bad. Jamison Crowder, after watching his film in Washington, thought he was a really good slot receiver. This year, he's the only receiver to play in every game, which obviously he gets aided by the fact that he only played three games, but every game he plays, he's over 100 yards. Really, really impressive. I think there was one route where he ran a little bit short of the six and wasn't able to get it, so that was on him. But overall, getting open, good yak, good hands, plays hard, which is nice to see him barking after some plays. Obviously, it's probably frustrating for him to get blown out all the time. He's actually producing and playing really, really well. So he's definitely a massive positive. But other than that, from the receivers, you see why they are a bunch of backups. Like, yeah, you know, Berrios has been he's impressed in terms of like him maybe being a long term fifth or sixth guy, but in terms of getting massive amount of reps, that he's been he's a disappointment, and he's not really, it was not a disappointment, I shouldn't say. Again, relative to expectations, he's been okay, but he's a backup. There's a reason that he didn't really play last week, and I thought he should have, but he's a backup, he is what he is. But he had a ball in the red zone, or actually in the end zone. Blackwell throws on the run, and he has to dive for it, but the ball goes right through his forearms, doesn't even touch the ball. So you wanted to see him have better eye-hand coordination, obviously, and catch that ball. You're in the NFL, the ball should not be going through your forearms. So you had Smith, who had a good game last week against the Broncos, but this week, you know, he showed some of those quarterback hands. He dropped multiple passes in this game, pretty easy throws. The receivers didn't really produce much, so they need guys to come back. And obviously, Hogan gets hurt now on the one play where his leg bent back and looked all funky. You don't have Cager, you don't have Mims, you don't have Perryman. So the Jets were playing with a bunch of backups minus Crowder, and that's kind of what happened. You had the one starter, I would say probably a top five slot receiver in the league right now, look great. And then all the other guys look like backups and drop balls and not help out Flacco. And obviously some of their lack of production was Flacco missing guys, not looking easy in the pocket. You know, the first play, it's funny, I'm sure we'll talk about Adam Gase, but you know, we're begging them to run more play action. First play action. Joe Flacco misses a wide open guy on an over route. So it was a combination of things, but the right receivers aren't good. The tight ends aren't good. They need a lot of resources poured into both positions going forward, which is obviously a pretty sad thing, because at least this year we thought going in, okay, you have Griffin, solid backup. You know, Wesco, solid backup, which I think Wesco has impressed in terms of him lining up at H-back and fullback. He's been a really, really good blocker. I'm not going to kill him for getting a handoff on third and one on the fullback dive when he's never ran the ball before. That's more on coaching than it is on him to expect him to get that and see a cutback lane. It's not really fair to him. So he's been a positive, so maybe he's a long-term blocking guy. But we thought we had, you know, Herndon and Griffin moving forward, and that's clearly not the case. We need more tight ends. We need more depth at receivers. We need a true number one X receiver for defenses to focus on. To help out whoever the quarterback's going to be next year. So, yeah, the both those groups definitely disappointed.
Some more curious decisions by Adam Gase all day, just scratching my head at some of these things. There were times where it was fourth and one and he should have gone for it and he punted. Then when he did go for it, he would use the most predictable play possible that would get stuffed. He just didn't know what to call or what to do all day. There was that weird handoff to Trevon Wesco that didn't produce anything. And then the Jeff Smith play where he took the ball and I guess he was going to go back and throw, got tackled for like a 20-yard loss. So everything Gase did made no sense, including the distribution of carries. Now, obviously, the Jets got down, so they were going to be throwing a lot more than running. But explain this one to me, Joe. Le'Veon Bell carried the ball 13 times, and by the way, looked pretty solid today. He had an average of 4.6 yards per carry, all told, 13 carries for 60 yards. Frank Gore gets 9 carries. What is that about? You have a healthy Le'Veon Bell. You only target him once. You give him 13 carries while you give Gore 9. That makes zero sense to me.
Yeah, so the whole Gase thing, I wish I like cared enough during the game to write all them down, because I'm just so numb to it at this point. But yeah, you know, they get a penalty, second and 24, they run the ball at the middle. Third and one, after, I believe that was after they threw the challenge flag, I'm not completely sure, but Jamison Crowder was very, very, very clearly, even on the initial broadcast angle, short of the first down. And then the Jets challenge it, like it wasn't even close. And that's not all on Gase. That's like organizational problem, because to my knowledge, most teams have guys in, you know, up wherever they are in the up high in one of those boxes, and they're reviewing the plays. So somebody must have called down and said, oh, challenge, I think we can win it. I don't understand how anybody ever even thought that was close. Like, you have a good amount of time that you throw the challenge flag after. They did that, and then they get, you know, obviously get smacked in timeout. Like you said, 4th and 1, we're like the first team in like NFL history to not go for on 2 4th and 1s in a row or 2 4th and 1s in the first quarter, whatever the stat is. I forget exactly. Again, I don't really care. Terrible. The fullback dives to Westo, and then he says, oh, you know, you should have seen him in practice. He never gets stopped. Like, okay, it's practice, and who cares? So that gets stuffed. And then Le'Veon Bell, you know, who we'll talk about in a little bit, on 4th and 1, they run like a fake dive toss to him. When Le'Veon Bell, one of his major knocks on him is he's not the most athletic, fast guy. Mm-hmm. And you want to have speed. It's not like we have Raheem Mostert. So now you're running him on a toss and expecting him to outrun the defense to the sideline? Like what? So that's a terrible decision. And you look at the running back distribution, you have Frank Gore, I believe I don't know if it's 10 or 9 carries, but regardless of whatever it was, who is not a good running back. And again, I've been defending the offensive line a little bit because, and I'm going to make a thread of this, all the missed holes of Frank Gore throughout his first couple of weeks in the Jets. And there's been plenty of missed holes where, you know, he might take 2 yards, but if he were to be a little bit easy and more balanced with his feet and have his weight more backwards instead of leaning forward so hard, just hitting any patch of grass he sees, you know, that could make a 2 yard opening, or not a 2 yard opening, but an opening for 2 yards, I should say. I should rephrase that, because a 2 yard opening is pretty wide. He'll miss cutback lanes, or he's not laterally athletic enough to cut back, and he misses a bunch of cutback lanes. And in this game, you have Bell come in, has a few nice, you know, runs, sees cutback lanes, you know, gets near 5 yards per carry, whatever it was, like 4.6, 4.7, which is a lot better than last year. So the offensive line run blocking, even with a unhealthy George Fant and without Becton, was much better than it was last year. And that's why when Becton and Fant are healthy, the offensive line run blocking has definitely been a massive step up, regardless, you know, if you think they're 20th or 18th or 25th, that from last year is a massive leap. So credit to Joe Douglas for that. I'm not going to back down on that he has definitely, helped out the offensive line. But then you give Bell, who, again, is running well, 13 carries, and Gore, 9 carries, when Bell looks 100 times better, 1 reception. And then you have him coming out after the game. I'm not sure if you saw this. Got out of work, and that's why you had some scheduling conflicts and things like that. But Le'Veon Bell comes out after the game and is liking tweets about him getting traded. Scott, did you see that or no?
Yes. In fact, I was just about to bring that up. Here are some tweets that Le'Veon Bell liked. You'll notice that one of them is from a very familiar name, and that, of course, is Joe Caparoso of TurnOnTheJets.com. He tweeted out, Le'Veon Bell had 1 target in the passing game today, the same amount as Trevon Wesco. Jeff Smith had 11 targets. Bell liked that one. Le'Veon Bell, whom the Jets stressed the need to involve in the passing game this season, had 1 catch on 1 target for 7 yards. That tweet from Connor Hughes. And then there was another tweet that Le'Veon liked saying that Le'Veon should be traded at the trade deadline. Unfortunately for Bell, I don't think that's going to happen because I don't think anybody's going to take that contract. You take that and you combine it with what we heard from Adam Gase in the post-game press conference, and you alluded to this, Joe. He said that what they're doing in the game is not matching what he's seeing in practice, and this just paints a picture, once again, of a guy who has absolutely no control of his team, no concept of what's going on. It's actually scary, and the fact that now Le'Veon Bell, who has played the good soldier all this time, has finally had enough. In fact, Brian Costello of the New York Post was all upset because Le'Veon Bell blew off the Zoom call afterwards. I don't blame Le'Veon Bell for the exact reason that was just pointed out by Connor Hughes and Joe Caparoso. He was targeted 1 time in the entire game after the entire offseason. Adam Gase was going around saying how he was going to incorporate Bell into the passing game. Here comes Bell rushing back from injury, and this is what he does. And then on top of it, Bell was effective running the ball, and he splits the carries with a completely ineffective Frank Gore. I don't blame Bell for finally having enough and for not wanting to get on that Zoom call, because if he got on the Zoom call, Joe, he might have said something he would have regretted later.
And then the other tweet, and I'll just read the first part of it, but somebody quote tweeted, you know, a Bleacher Report account that says Le'Veon likes, and like the little eye emoji, and another person quote tweeted that the Jets should trade Le'Veon Bell. I love the guy, but I'm tired of Gase's BS. He doesn't know how to use him, so they might as well get a pick from the Wall Street. And he liked that. And like usually, if you see likes like this, like I'll go back like 2-3 hours later. I'm like, okay, he was heated after the game. He didn't unlike these things. Like these are still on his account. So he is done with the Jets, and I agree with him. But that's the same thing I didn't mention about Crowder. I'm worried about Crowder getting traded because I think he could be a piece here. But like, what's to say the Jets just don't dump everybody who has any type of trade value at the trade deadline? I think it's smart for a guy like Le'Veon Bell because, you know, listen, is he going to be here in 2-3 years and still be really effective when the Jets are hopefully making, you know, actual playoff runs? No. But could Crowder be? I think so. So Le'Veon is probably going to get traded, and good for him. You know, we took an all-pro running back, a Hall of Fame-type running back, and made him a complete joke, like we were talking about, with not even just the play calls on third and fourth down. But the fact that, you know, you have Trayvon Wesco running the ball instead of Le'Veon Bell on third down. And then another part of the game, which, again, there's probably more instances of this, but just from the first watch, there's a play where Frank Gore splits out wide in an empty set, and they target Frank Gore in an in route instead of Le'Veon Bell. Like, why is Le'Veon Bell not running routes that wide? And instead it's Frank Gore? Like, what? Like, how does that even happen? So Adam Gase is an absolute joke. Like, and there's some concepts I said that are pretty intriguing that could work, but his nature of just my way or the highway, running Gore on routes, you know, coming out and saying, oh, it's practice and, you know, the drops and nothing's wrong on my offense. Like in the Bills game, I wouldn't change any calls, and his lack of adjustment after the game. They asked him about some adjustments that he could have made. Oh, I'll have to watch the tape. Okay. Well, guess who gets the benefit of watching tape? I do, and I cannot criticism. But guess what? You don't. You have to adjust in-game. You're the head coach of an NFL team. Like, you can't just say, oh, I have no idea what's going on right now. We'll figure it out on Tuesday. No, you're in a game. You have to adjust. So the fact that, yeah, Le'Veon Bell doesn't get targeted, doesn't get used, gets used just as much as Frank Gore. Frank Gore actually runs routes and they get targeted where Le'Veon doesn't. It is an absolute mess right now. And, you know, like I said before we started recording, the benefit of Gase staying is the fact that they're going to lose probably every other game under Gase. Whereas if they bring in another guy, you know, whoever it may be, Boyer or Jim Bob Cooter or whatever, maybe they would win a game because they'll be a little bit amped up, or team, like everybody in the sideline, nobody's talking to each other. Everybody's heads down. Everybody looks pissed off. We had the Cardinals making special teams tackles and dancing and things like that. So it's kind of like sad to see the state of the team right now. So maybe if they change the coach, it'll change that and people get a fire under their ass. But so that's, you know, I guess the positive of him staying is they're going to continue to suck and get the first pick. But at the same time, it's like you kind of want him fired just to ease your soul. Like, it's just knowing he's gone, because even with him here, like 99% we're sure that he didn't get fired, but we're talking about the Johnson. So if the Jets were to come out and win 2-3 games in a row, and then when guys are healthy, and then he comes out and says, oh, you know, I have faith in him, you know, the team rallied around him, we're going to keep him for 2021. Like, is that, can you undoubtedly say it's not going to happen? Which I, like I said, 99% sure that it won't, but that 1% still creeps in the back of my mind. So, and, you know, Dan Quinn gets fired, who made a Super Bowl run a couple of years ago. Bill O'Brien makes the playoffs every single year. And obviously, has underachieved overall, but is fired. And Adam Gase, who has had more blowout losses, more two-score losses than wins as a Jets coach, is still here because, you know, the idiot Johnson's had to come out, or Chris Johnson had to come out and back his, you know, his head coach after one game of the season, which should be a red flag to Johnson. Initially that he had to do that. So why come out and back him? So it's a mess right now. You have a coach who's trying to win to save his job while the GM is trying to rebuild the roster. And this is why people say, and we talked about this last week, Sky, which I don't know if there's an example of this game, but oh, well, him saying the coach doesn't hurt the team. He literally hurt Becton and Darnold because he wants to win. Where if the interim coach, whatever, wouldn't have done that because, you know, Joe Douglas could have, you know, hopefully said to not play those guys, which is a whole other issue, because if Joe Douglas doesn't have that power to tell Gase not to play those guys after injury, does he not have that flexibility to tell Gase that? You know, so there's a bunch of issues that are kind of underlying in that, but it's just so bad overall.
Just to put a capper on this, Joe, so far this season, the Jets have scored 75 points. Their opponents have scored 161. That's a point differential of negative 86. Teams playing the Jets are averaging 32 points a game. So it sort of backs up what we were saying, that the Jets have both the worst offense and the worst defense in the league. That's a hell of a combination. Joe Blewett of JetsXFactor.com, thanks so much for coming on and wrapping up this game with me. Really appreciate it. I know you're going to have the film up in a couple of days, and boy, are you going to have some things to point out. So for people that want to check out your work, follow you on Twitter, where can they get a hold of you, and how can they look at your film reviews?
Yeah, JetsXFactor.com, Jets with an S, XFactor.com, the YouTube, just type in JetsXFactor, Blewett Splits specifically, and then follow me on Twitter, JoeRB31. And the positive thing is a lot of these shows, and I actually just started a bunch of threads through on Twitter. So if you want to go on the threads, I'm looking at a lot of young guys, John Franklin Myers, Huff, Quinn and Williams. I'm doing a bunch of threads, Becton. I'm going to start a bad Darnold thread and a good Darnold thread, which I'm sure is not going to create any issues on Twitter. those are all out there. So you can go follow me there if you want to see some of the young guys. I'm not focusing on the guys like, you know, Steve McClendon, even though I love him, and Pierre Desir, the guys who aren't going to be here. I'm not really focusing on them too much. So you can follow me there. And then, like I said, the show will be out in a couple of days.
Before we head out, let's check in with our buddy Charlie Campbell over at WalterFootball.com and get an NFL draft update. The Jets are going to have two first-round picks in this draft, so we got to look at the light at the end of the tunnel and see who might be in play for the Jets in the draft in April next year. Charlie, tell us about who upped their stock this weekend. Welcome to the show, my man.
Thanks, Scott. So this week in college football, we saw some excellent performances from skill position players that could interest the Jets. First of all, you got to look at Travis Etienne, the running back from Clemson. He just had a monster game against Miami, showing off really an incredible skill set. He's been known as that speedster running back, that home run hitter, a guy who can take any carry the distance, and he showed that again, putting Miami away when he took off on a 72-yard touchdown run. Later, he had an even more impressive run where he hurdled a defender, stiff-armed another guy into the turf, and pushed his way through for a gain over 20. He was just putting on a highlight show of speed, cutting ability, athleticism, and improved physicality. He's gotten stronger and tougher as a runner this year, and you're seeing it with more yards after contact. Against the Hurricanes, he had about 150 yards on the ground with a couple touchdowns, caught 8 passes for 73 yards. So he's really proving himself worthy of first-round consideration here. And I think with that second first-round pick, that would be an interesting player for the Jets, because I don't think Le'Veon Bell is going to be on that team a whole lot longer. They could use a difference maker for whether it's Trevor Lawrence or Sam Darnold is the quarterback next year. They could use a guy from the backfield that really makes things happen for their offense. Another skill position player that really had a nice week was Kadarius Toney, the wide receiver from Florida. Really showed explosiveness, dangerous with the ball in his hands. And Toney has been teasing and flashing big play potential throughout his college career, but has had a lot of injuries. But it's all kind of coming together for him as a senior here. He's staying healthy and productive, and he's a mismatch nightmare for defenses. Now, as far as a stock down goes, I would have to say TJ Vasher, the wide receiver from Texas Tech, has a stock down, and not necessarily because of the field. On the field, he's a freak wide receiver. He's 6'6", about 210 pounds. Scouts say his style of play is really similar to A.J. Green, just a great ability to make acrobatic catches, mismatch size, enough quickness to get downfield. However, the stock down is because I've heard from multiple team sources that say that Vasher has real problems with work ethic, desire, and dedication. So the football character are causing teams to really grade him a lot lower, and it's hurting him around the league. So he's going to have to really improve that image in the pre-draft meetings and visits and whatnot in order to rise. He has a great skill set, but just the football character is really hurting him right now. So that's it for your Walter Football Stock Report. Thank you, Scott.
Thanks, Charlie, and thank you for listening. If you haven't given us a 5-star review on iTunes yet, if you could go ahead and do that for us, really appreciate it. Easy way to help out the show if you like what we're doing. Doesn't take you much time, doesn't cost you any money, but it goes a long way to help us out. So if you could go ahead and do that for us, we'd be quite grateful. And for the latest and greatest in New York Jets podcasts, you know where to go. That's Turn on the Jets Digital and turnonthejets.com.